The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
This is Liberty Bell Smack with your hosts, Mark Mancini, Sal Tartaglia, and Marianne Castello. Talking everything sports, everything Philly style. Liberty Bell Smack, right here, right now. It's that time. You are listening to Liberty Bell Smack, and I am your host, Marianne Castello, and it's time for that lip smacking, trash talking good Philadelphia style right here on WWDB AM Talk 860 every Thursday night from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's prime time drive time for you guys in the East. And you can listen to us five ways, whichever works best for you. You can tune in to WWDB AM Talk 860 out of Philadelphia. And if that's gone dark, no worries. You could find us on HD2 radio station 97.5 or download WWDB app and listen to us anytime, anywhere. Or you could go to WWDBAM.com and click listen live. Or you could call the listen or even talk to us or our guests tonight at 888-329-3306. And right now I could see my next host. He's in the green room with me, and he is a broadcast vet born in Pittsburgh, but raised in sunny LA. You know him from his years in the ring with Extreme Professional Wrestling on TV. He's got over 17 years behind the mic from San Diego to Los Angeles with SiriusXM, the SB Nation American Forces Network, and now Philly on WWDB AM, as well as the Saucy Spin online radio show and the Breaking It Down podcast. If it's sports, he's done it, or he knows all about it. Let's welcome our host, Mr. Mark Mancini. Hey, Mark.
Well, it's always sunny in Philly, man. The cheesesteaks, we got the Rocky statue, the link. We got two great guests, Jake Russell. We've got Jeff Biggs. Man, oh, man, the Capitals are playing the Flyers. You're moderating this. Tear it up, Marianne.
Well, it's going really good, and you know what? Our other co-host, Sal, well, he's stuck in Philly traffic, from what I understand, having a hard time getting to that studio. So we're just going
to
start.
He might be heading to Pittsburgh. Who knows? Tell him to go the other way.
I think he's sucking down a cheesesteak and not telling us. That's what I think he's doing. That's what I think.
You might be right.
And
hopefully,
I know that you're.
Who knows where he might be heading out towards where Jake is in D.C. there.
It's a possibility, but what I could tell you, Mark, is that the weather here on the East Coast today is so mild. It was like 66 degrees, so you can't brag about your L.A. weather and all the stuff that you're going to tell me today.
No, we just, today's a warm winds coming through, about 69 degrees. Might cool down to the 60s early next week, and then another heat wave coming through, and Jeff can attest to that, man.
I'm sure he can. And you know what? If people are driving around, or if Sal is stuck in that traffic jam because somebody got in an accident in Philly, I can tell you, Mark, they can go visit JT Auto Body for superior auto body repair at very reasonable prices. Bring your damaged vehicle to JT Auto Body, located at 416 Primus Road in Fallcroft, Pennsylvania. Call 610-534-1643 for expert work performed by owner Joey Turner's staff or certified technicians. Again, that number is 610-534-1643. So there you have it, Mark.
Wow, I'll tell you, you know, maybe Sal's going to get out of that car, start pushing them World Series chronology books and start running to the studios.
I know. And for those of you who don't know, here it is, his World Series chronology book. Well,
great
you're
book.
Off. It is a great book. But you know what? We have great guests tonight. We have Jake Russell and Jeff Biggs. So I'm going to get right to it because they've been waiting patiently in the green room. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, they've been warming up in the bullpen. One's going to bring a slider into the game. The other one might throw a curve. Maybe we get 104-mile-an-hour fastball.
Well, that would be great. Let's see. Maybe that's what's going to happen here, because he is a graduate of the University of Maryland with a bachelor's degree in journalism and received an associate's degree in general studies from Arundel Community College in Arnold, Maryland. Our guest is so ambitious that he works hard doing several things all together or overlapping them. For over 13 years, his talents were utilized at What's Up magazine. He was a contributing writer previewing the upcoming seasons for both the Washington Redskins and Baltimore Ravens for 2001-2002 and the Navy Midshipmen in 2005. And then in 2012, he wrote an article chronicling the Redskins-Ravens rivalry. After being the contributing writer, he became the calendar editor for the magazine, where he interviewed public figures such as Jim Belushi, Cal Ripken Jr., Roger Staubach, Doug Williams, Torrey Smith, Joe Flacco, Dewey Bunnell, the Harlem Globetrotters, Pablo Francisco, and Jeff Dunham. In 2009, he was a team staff writer at Maryland Maniacs, covering the team's home games at Showplace Arena in Upper Marble, Maryland, and Coalfield House in College Park, Maryland, and traveled on road trips to Bloomington, Illinois, and Richmond, Virginia, by conducting player interviews, shooting game photos and video, and writing game articles. He worked as a staff writer for the Hogs.net for over 10 years, writing approximately 200 articles for the Washington Redskins-based website. He interviewed numerous Redskins over the years, including Andre Carter, each week from 2008 to 2010. He got former Redskins Philip Daniels in 2009 and Adam Carriker in 2010 to contribute their own blogs each week on the website. He also covered the Washington Capitol games for the site's THN on Ice section. Currently, he's with the Washington Post as a sports writer and blogger for over 8 years now, where he writes for the DC Sports Blog and Early Lead Blog, publishes stories on the official Post sports accounts on Facebook and Twitter, updates game scores and stats for Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia teams on allmetsports.com, and compiles top 10 lists in football season, creating and editing photo video galleries, and writes roundups for high school games. In addition to the Washington Post, his works have been featured in the Chicago Tribune, the New York Daily News, the Houston Chronicle, the Toronto Daily Star, the Independent, Yahoo Sports, MSN, the NFL, Boston.com, SNFL.com, ESPN.com, amongst other popular sports websites. In 2014, he founded JakeRussellSports.com as an independent source of Washington, D.C. sports coverage that includes the Washington NFL team, the Washington Nationals MLB Club, the NBA Washington Wizards, and the NHL Washington Capitals. On the site, he created the webpage design, shot photos, and wrote content that appeals to local sports fans, so much so that his site received more than 10,000 views in more than 70 countries in its first year. He is an author. In the spring of 2016, he published the book 100 Things National Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, with the foreword written by Dusty Baker, and went on a book tour. Then in March 2020, he published his second book, which was a follow-up for 100 Things National Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, the updated World Series edition that you'll read about. How did the Nationals go from 19 to 31 to 2019 World Series champions? Or a former Senators catcher who became a U.S. spy? Or the history of presidential first pitches, and so much more. And the fun facts? He loves a good cheesesteak, watching true crime, and the new leather reclining seats in the movie theaters, where he hasn't been in almost 4 years. Now he's in Philly for a great cheesesteak and reclining in his new leather seat talking to all of us. Let's welcome Jake Russell to Liberty Bell Smack. Hey, Jake.
Yeah, baby.
That was quite the introduction. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the invite.
You're very welcome.
Wow. You know, Jake, and I was blessed a couple weeks ago to do a nice interview with you. And, you know, your expertise, your knowledge. We were talking, you know, born in Pittsburgh. The Steelers have always been my team. But my favorite NFC team growing up was the Washington Redskins. And we talked about that. 87 years in the city. I got to see them in the Super Bowl in 82. When they played the Dolphins, they beat them 27-17. And the next year, the L.A. Raiders steamrolled the Skins. But, you know, when I looked at, you know, growing up with the Skins, and we talked about the helmet when they had the yellow ones with the R and the feathers, and Kilmer was there and everything, it was okay. But when they came into that burgundy gold Indian head, I thought to myself, man, these Redskin Cowboy games are going to be something to watch. And now we've fast forward this thing years later. We've got a Washington football team. We've got a Washington Commanders. I know things are politically correct these days, but your thoughts in covering these guys for so many years living in that city, what's your thoughts on this name change and everything?
I don't know if I'll ever truly, sink in, because I grew up knowing that as the team name, as the Washington Redskins. And now it's, we've, you know, went through 2 years with them being called the Washington football team. And now they're the Washington Commanders. It still feels a little surreal that there's the franchise that's that important to the DC area that has undergone a major rebrand like that. It's different than when the Bullets went to the Wizards. I know the vast majority of fans did not want Bullets to switch to anything, let alone the Wizards. And I remember they were taking out, you know, polls through the newspaper to for fans to pick which new name they would want for the basketball team. And the fans have gotten used to Wizards, but I think the vast majority don't like the name still. And I feel like that's probably going to be the same process with the Washington Commanders. I feel like obviously most fans did not want that to change from the red. They did not want to move on from the previous name, let alone 2 years of a name that says football team. Although a few fans warmed up to that name during its interim phase over the last two seasons. But right now with them being called Washington Commanders, that's still, I'm still adjusting from calling them Washington football team to Washington Commanders. I'm still used to calling them the Washington football team. So I guess like everyone's, everyone's brain operates differently. It's also going to hit differently once I see them like wearing the uniforms actually in a game on the field, or, you know, seeing them at training camp in practice with this new gear, this new helmet, this new identity. It's quite different, but it's, the last 2 years have been weird for pretty much everybody on earth.
Well, one more and I'll give it over to Sal. And, you know, when you look at the city of D.C., we know the name change of the, you know, Washington Bullets, the Baltimore Bullets, the Capitol Bullets. This team at least had an identity. You had, you know, guys like Phil Chenier, Reardon, Rulon, Elvin Hayes. And the Wizards really haven't done nothing after they even changed the name. But when you look at the Redskins, I mean, here's a team that won Super Bowls. They were a force to reckon with Theismann and Riggins and everything. And now to wipe out that whole identity and just come up with a pretty much USFL team name, how does that hit DC? Because it's two different comparisons with the Redskins and you know, the Bullets.
I think I'm not sure how much of this is broken down in terms of the age demographic, but I know definitely the most of the older demographic, they don't like the name change. And they also, there's probably a sense amongst them more so than most, there's probably a sense amongst most of the fan base, but probably primarily towards the older fan base, that it almost feels like a franchise or an expansion franchise. And for me, looking at it, looking in terms of the uniforms, for me, in terms of the fact that the two of the three, they don't look anything like the previous uniforms they've worn the last 35, 40 years. So that kind of adds to the frame of mind that this feels like an expansion franchise in a way, because you have the white uniforms where the only gold that you have on them is the Nike swoosh. And then on the black uniforms, they've never worn an all-black uniform or a black uniform, period, in their franchise's history. So, I mean, mentally, I was prepared for them having an alternate uniform and a black one at that. So that was like obviously going to be different. I mean, because it was a look they had never worn before. But to have the road white uniform, which was their classic uniform they had worn, burgundy, from their glory years from the 80s and 90s, to have that look like more like the Falcons or the Cardinals, that was kind of taken a little bit to get used to. And the gradients, too. I still haven't gotten used to seeing the idea of them having gradients and those patterns and those designs when they are a heritage franchise. And typically heritage franchises have simple classic looks, where the look may be simple and uniform and logo wise, but the colors bring the attention to them. They do the popping for them. They don't need special spiffy designs to speak for them. kind of like, you know, the Packers, the Raiders. The Steelers had a more of a classic look when they had the block numbers. And about the mid-90s, I think they switched to the rounded numerals. You know, teams like that, they have classic looks that they're simple, but the colors do the talking for them. So it's taken a little while for me to wrap my head around them overdoing the modernizing of the uniforms.
We'll talk about classic looks. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack right here on WWDBAM Talk 860. And if you're just tuning in, you could also find us on Facebook Live if you want to see all our faces and our guest faces by going to either the WWDB 860 page or going to Liberty Bell Smack Facebook page. You could find us there. And you know, Mark, you know, he came strolling in late, but he is here. He is our host. He is a product of the schools and playing fields of Drexel Hills, Delaware County, by way of Southwest Philadelphia. He's been in the Navy. He's been in the construction industry and was a nuclear medicine tech. And while doing all that, he even had time to compile over 30 years of highlights and stats of World Series game and publish his first book, World Series Chronology. While doing press for the book, he developed a taste for broadcasting. And here he is. Let's welcome our host, late but here and great, Mr. Sal Tartaglia. Hey, Sal.
Hey, fashionably late. I had a hair out of place, Mayor, and to keep appearances up with your, you know, your excellent face, I had to fix that malady. So,
well, you're scoring points, so you're forgiven.
Did you hit any car, Sal, on the way?
My wife is my is my driver.
And then maybe pick up a cheesesteak.
My wife is my driver, so yes. Being we got stuck in traffic, there was a steak shop.
I think we ran in. You and your wife did. You extended Valentine's 3 more days.
we didn't even remember it was Valentine's Day until like lunch. Yeah, it was crazy.
Oh wow! On that note, I'm going to leave you, Sal, for our guest Jake. You could start with those questions.
Hey, Jake. Touching on what you were talking about, the Skins as well, the Washington. Commanders. I'm sorry. same problem you're having. I think that the situation with them, and as opposed to the Bullets, is longevity. You know, they showed up in the 30s from Boston, but that's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to switch a gear and talk about your book. When I first saw the title, it brought me to mind of a Frank Fitzpatrick, an old Inquirer a reporter from Philadelphia. He wrote a book called "You Can't Lose Them All." And it was when the Phillies were the first team to lose their 10,000th game. And that's what it brought to mind. Then I read a couple excerpts. It's really a serious book, and you bring into play, you combine the Senators, the Twins. I didn't see any Rangers, but I'm assuming because of the second coronation out of Washington, there's probably going to be some mention of Ranger players. But, I was particularly curious about you had segments on Worth and Bryce Harper. Of course, this book was written before you had won the title, and Bryce was still there. He won the MVP. But with respect to Worth, because there was a lot of animosity when he left Philadelphia, and, you know, when we found out he signed for $126 million, and don't get me wrong, great ball player, but I didn't think he was worth that kind of money at the time. But, you know, you don't begrudge anybody that. So there was a lot of vitriol when he played here, when we traveled down there to watch them play. And it's a shame because I liked Worth, you know. I really did. I loved his story, coming back from all the injuries, finally getting on the big stage and shining. But with respect to him and Bryce, is there a similar situation now in Washington when Harper shows up to play in red pinstripes? Because we felt that way when we watched Worth.
Well, yeah, when Bryce came back the first night, I actually made it a point to actually go to that game just to see what the atmosphere was like and to kind of experience that, because I don't know, I had just gotten so used to seeing him in the Nationals uniform. It was almost as if like the Redskins had changed to the football team and then the Commanders. I didn't think, you know, I was like most people, I didn't really think that.
Yeah.
Let me backtrack. I've told people that had asked me my opinion on it. I said, just if you're a Nats fan, hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. Because that's a phrase my mother taught me as a young kid. Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. So if you want him back, that's fine. But prepare for him leaving for another team.
Right.
So that you know, not so shocked when he does it. But the fact that he went to a division rival and the closest one at that was, it still had a nice ripple effect amongst the fan base. And the night he came back to play for Philly, it sounded like Philadelphia South. It was a lot of, well, in terms of a lot of boo birds going on. I don't know if I had heard that many boos in Nationals Park, and I had been to a lot of games there. And obviously that's cooled down a little bit. They still boo him a little bit once he walks up, but I just don't think there's as much, they don't have the energy that they did the first night, the first week he came back. And also the fact that the Nationals won the World Series cushioned the blow quite a bit, you know, a few months after he signed with the Phillies. So, so yeah, the fans were obviously displeased with the fact that he went to the Phillies. It would be one thing if he went to like the Dodgers or the, you
right,
know,
right.
Name your American League team. But the fact that he went to the division rival, that's only 2 hours up 95. It stung them a little bit, but obviously, you know, about however, what, 8, 9, 10 months after that, they got over it kind of quickly once the Nats won the World Series title. But yeah, once he came back, there was a lot of booing going on that night.
And he's the kind of guy, he's you know, a lightning rod, his swagger, cockiness, whatever you want to call it. You know, when he was in
that, likes that,
when he was like, in that, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. But now that he's a Philly, just like with Rose, you know, you cotton to the ball player. And I love, I look at it as confidence now, because I remember they voted him 2 years in a row. The players, they voted him the most overrated player in the game. And then he went out and won the MVP. So, you know, you just got to hand it to him, because that's how you put to rest stuff that comes at you. You show them what you can do.
Yeah, and he's been dealing with criticism since he was in, you know, high school age. He's, and you can tell by the way he talks, he's got an armor around him. There's a guardedness to him.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's mentally strong and psychologically strong and prepared for that. And I feel like a big, even, you know, especially when he's with the Nationals, he plays with his hair on fire for using a terrible cliche. He wears his heart on his sleeve, another cliche. He has so much energy and passion when he plays that's the most emotion you're probably going to see out of him. You're not going to see that much out of him during, you know, like a post game interview or anything like that, unless he's changed in the last 3 years. But if he's still the same, he's got this guardedness to him and this armor. And he's a big part of me feels like he likes the idea, the concept of being booed on the road, being heckled. Like, okay, that's, I can handle this. I've been dealing with criticism since I was a teenager. This is, I'm at the best position of my life I've ever been in. Nothing you can say or do is going to hurt me. So I feel like he kind of enjoys that whenever he goes on the road and gets booed.
Yeah, it seems to be laborious too, which is sad, because I want him to enjoy himself. And we're tickled pink to have him, and we thank you. I hope we get to see him play with this lockout here, and I'll touch on some of your opinions with that in a minute. If the lockout continues, what is your opinion with respect to viewers turning toward the minor leagues or even international ball, you know, in the Caribbean and Korea?
Well, I feel like that would do well for minor league attendance, and especially for the types of fans who pay attention to their team's top prospects, especially if they're in their playing in their backyard. I feel like that would be a nice little boost if you're not going to have, you know, Phillies and Nats playing at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday night. That's a perfect night to go out to your local minor league team and take your niece or nephew out there and have a fun time, you know, an inexpensive time, and help them become baseball fans. But in terms of those who are focused on the pro game, it's going to hurt. It's going to be strange. And it's obviously goes back to the whole, you know, the old adage, billionaires fighting millionaires on issues, even though it's deeper than that. I mean, it's not just a matter of how much money they're getting paid. It's just the matter of how the league is structured, how minor leaguers are treated. There's a lot of elements that go into the negotiating table. I think probably the most frustrating part for people who don't necessarily understand what's going on is the fact that they've had all this time to work on a deal and to talk amongst themselves between the MLBPA and the MLB, and MLB is the fact that, you know, they've had so much time, but yet they haven't made much progress. And, you know, the reports today is that they only met for 15 minutes. And I'm sure a lot of fans are seeing that news thinking, what are you guys doing? I mean, what else are you doing the rest of the day? We're here, you know, spring training was supposed to start. Pitchers and catchers are supposed to report. And, you know, players are supposed to be in their spring training camps right now, and no one's anywhere. So I understand the frustration amongst fans, and as someone who enjoys, you know, watching baseball throughout the season, it's a little nerve-wracking, I guess, for, you know, to have a little bit of a exaggerated phrase, you know, waiting and not knowing. You know, I guess it's the more of the unknown, not knowing when they're actually going to strike a deal and not knowing if opening day is going to be pushed back at all. I think that's probably the biggest thing that's weighing on fans' minds right now.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to our special guest, Jake Russell, right here on WWDBAM Talk 860 on Liberty Bell Smack. It's that lip smacking, trash talking good Philadelphia style. And I know that, Sal, you were running a little late, lots of traffic out there, but you still have a friend that could help everybody out. You want to tell us a little bit about him?
That's right. JT Auto Body. They're never late. They're always working. For superior auto body repairs at very reasonable prices, bring your damaged vehicle to JT Auto Body, located at 416 Promise Avenue in Fulcroft, PA. Call them at 610-534-1643 for expert work done by owner Joey Trainer's staff of certified technicians. Again, that number is 610-534-1643. Tell them Sal Brocher sent you.
Yeah, there you go. You heard it right from Sal. And speaking of people in Philly, we have people watching on Liberty Bell Smack. And we would like to give a shout out to one of our number one listeners, Mr. Mickey Delaney. He's saying, hi, Sal.
Number one fan.
Calling me beautiful. And tells Mark, fix your hair. That's what he said.
Ran out of moose, Mickey. Send some to Philly.
And then we have Ralph Williams saying, my man, Mr. Mark Mancini. So let's give him a little shout out as well. And we are waiting for our next guest. More like he's been waiting for us in the stadium. So we're going to bring him right on right now. He's been a staple on LA Sports Radio for over three decades, serving as a pregame and postgame host, beaten travel reporter, and national anchor. He began his career in the late 80s at KWNK, where he served as sports director and play-by-play man for high school basketball and football. In 1992, he landed at Sports Radio 710 KMPC. He's been quoted as saying, I covered the Raiders making LA radio history by interviewing the players after the game live via cell phone. And in 1994, he worked as a beat reporter for the Angels and hosted post-game Angel Talk. After KMPC, he continued as a reporter working as the LA radio correspondent for ESPN Radio, AP, UPI, and One-on-One Sports. In 1995, he was part of LA's first ever FM Sports Talk by doing sports updates at KMAX. In 1996, he was back working as the LA field reporter for XTRA 690 before starting up with XTRA Sports 1150 in March of 1997. In addition to being a reporter, he used to be the regular fill-in on the nationally syndicated Jim Rome Show and hosted a midday sports show with Ben Maller. He was a familiar force in LA Sports Talk Radio for more than a decade and was a big part of XTRA Sports from day one and has also done shows for the Sports Fan Radio Network. He's traveled as an everyday beat reporter with various teams that include the LA Dodgers, Los Angeles Angels, and the NFL Raiders while in Los Angeles. He was LA's first ever Lakers radio beat reporter after covering and traveling with the team. He served as a pregame and postgame host for the Los Angeles Rams, the LA Lakers, the Los Angeles Clippers, the Dodgers and Angels, UCLA, and USC football and basketball. He also was a national update anchor for Fox Sports Radio, NBC Sports Radio, and ESPN Sports. He worked as a host, reporter, and anchor at KLAA, KNX, KSPN 710 Los Angeles, 70 KLAC, Mighty 690 Los Angeles, and KNX News 97.1 FM Los Angeles. On Saturdays, he can be found on Compass Media Network as an in-studio host for coverage of the NFL, NCAA, college football, NCAA men's college basketball, providing updates and analysis along with Greg Daniels calling the live game. In September of 2020, he joined SportsMap Radio Network as an anchor on NFL Rush, bringing all the news and updates to get you through NFL Sunday with the most comprehensive pro football coverage on national radio. He can also be found on Biggs and Balzer, both Saturdays and Sundays, 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with Howard Balzer covering it all from NFL to MLB to NBA and much, much more. Big Z is currently living in Los Angeles, California, and walked the beat all the way to Philly, reporting all things from the Liberty Bell to the best show in Philly on WWDB AM Talk 860. Let's have a big Liberty Bell smack welcome to Mr. Jeff Biggs. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, baby.
Wow. That hands down the greatest intro I've ever received in my entire career. Marianne, that was outstanding. Props to you. Forget the show. I dropped the mic right there. That was tremendous.
You know what, Biggs? I've known you such a long time. You're a humble guy, man. You've opened up an opportunity for me to come on in Houston and stuff, and I'm so blessed. But let me tell you something. When I think of you in Los Angeles, I got to put you up there with Vin Scully, Chick Hearn, and Bob Miller. They got statues. When the hell are they going to give you a statue alongside Joe McDonald and some of these great talents in Los Angeles?
You're too kind, Mark. Thank you very much. And you know how I feel about you. You're one of my favorite people on the planet, and I'm so pumped for all the good things that are happening for you. Long overdue, and I'm blessed to be on your show. And listening to, it was great to hear what Jake was saying, and hearing all the Philly talk, number one, I mean, I'm totally craving a cheesesteak. I had two really extended periods of time in Philly. In addition to, you know, going there with the Dodgers and the Lakers during the regular season, I was blessed to cover the 93 World Series. Remember that one with the Blue Jays and the Phillies? So I spent a lot of time there. Went to that wild 15-14 game, Curt Schilling, Mitch Williams, Joe Carter. And then in 01, I was fortunate. I was traveling with Shaq and Kobe and the Lakers, and that was probably the highlight of my career, covering that squad on a day-to-day basis. But we spent a lot of time there in Philly for the finals, and I literally – had cheesesteaks every day and never got sick of them. So I miss it.
You know, it's funny because what you did, I mean, that's just simply amazing. That's almost like being an athlete, traveling with these guys and going to the different cities with the Dodgers, with the Lakers, and being the beat writer. Take us through some of these experiences. In baseball, it's a little different because you maybe spend 3-4 days in the city. In basketball, it's kind of like you're in the city, you got to get the Philly cheesesteak, you got to run to the arena, cover it, and the next thing you know, you're busing it to Washington, D.C. to see Jake Russell.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, nothing special about me. The opportunities, the doors that I've been fortunate to walk through have all 1,000% They've all been God's favor and blessing upon me. So I can't take any credit for it, but I'll give you a couple highlights. Number one, when I was traveling with the Angels, one of the seasons, Buck Rogers was the manager. Remember Buck? And he was so cool. He allowed me on the road trips to shag fly balls during early batting practice. So I got to, you know, put the shorts and the glove and the cap on. And I got to take batting practice against Rod Carew. I hit a double over JT Snow's head in the Kingdom. That was a highlight. imagine, you know, I'm on the road and I went for early BP. So we would go like at 2 o'clock local time for all the guys on the bench that don't get a lot of playing time. They would get an extra hour aside from the regular BP to try to stay sharp. And so nobody wanted, you know, in the summertime, the players, they don't want to go stand in the sun and you know, get hot and get balls. So they said, hey, go for it. Go. And by the end of the season, I'm not going to brag, but I got pretty good out there. I was moving around pretty good. And then with the Lakers, I mean, Mark, you can only you cover the team. I mean, literally, no hyperbole. That Lakers Shaq Kobe team, I mean, they were rock stars. I mean, it was unreal. And the one thing I will say though, from the experience, just as vicariously being around teams as a beat reporter, I know everybody we criticize and we say, oh, they make millions of dollars and they stay in five-star. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But you know what? When you get in through the season, it's a grind, and they don't have a lot of free time over the course of a season. So, yeah, again, I'm not discounting all those other things, but they put a lot into it, and it's tough when, like you said, Mark, when you go from one city, you get in the middle of the night, and it can be a grind. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Hey, one more. I'll give it over to Sal. Jake might want to get in and throw some questions. A lot to talk about the Kobe situation, but the and you covered this team too, and I know they made news today with the whole situation with Tyler Skaggs. You were right there covering, and I love the Angels dearly, and we both know Tim Mead, and he's been on the show and everything. What's your assessment of the thing that went down today in Anaheim with Eric Kay? Such a sad situation.
I've had a heaviness on my heart since this afternoon when I got the news. Eric Kay is a dear friend.
Yeah.
I've known him for a long, long time. He's got a beautiful family. His dad was former Ram, worked for the Angels for years. And you know, I don't want to, we don't have time, but part of my testimony is I've been sober. I had some issues in my past, and praise God, I've been sober for 35 years, but I know the ugliness of addiction and it can take out anybody. Yeah. And I know Eric, I can't speak I don't know all the details. I guarantee you nobody was expecting. That's the thing about drugs. Nobody, you don't expect to die. You know, you don't expect.
Right.
And I'm heartbroken for Eric. He's going to be in jail for a long time. I'm heartbroken for Tyler Skaggs, who was just, he was an awesome dude and didn't deserve to die. And just the whole thing is just tragic. And my heart's grieving. I really feel for everybody involved.
Yep.
Well, sorry to try to pick things up after that talk about Tyler. It's a shame. But I wanted to ask you a question about the L.A. is a potpourri of sporting teams. You covered the Rams, the Raiders, the Lakers, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Clippers, the Chargers. Which are your favorite?
Well, number one for me, number one on the list would be the Rams. That it's just a connection that I've had since I was a little boy with my late dad. And I'm dating myself, even though I don't feel like I'm old, but as a kid in the 70s, back in the day, NFL games were not televised unless they were sold out. And there were times when the Rams games didn't sell out. So my dad, we would drive to an area outside of LA called Bakersfield. And we would go to a Motel 6 where they would have the games televised.
How about that? Much.
You can imagine the TV quality of those
right
back in the. So they're number one, but right behind it would be the Lakers and the Dodgers.
I'm glad to hear you say the Rams, because I want to knock you down a peg or two since you won the title. You realize of all those teams I mentioned, the nine teams that I mentioned, you realize the Kings are the only indigenous Los Angeles team. Everybody else you got from another city.
Absolutely.
All right, I don't want to touch on that. I just wanted to make a statement. Now, with respect to the Super Bowl, kudos. You guys really lit it up. And I'll tell you, that last drive, Cup took over the last drive, and Donald took over the last series. I mean, they stepped up, and Cup, I mean, you know, he set so many records. I mean, 33 receiving catches was a record for a single postseason. The thing about the Triple Crown and the MVP and the Player of the Year, you know, the Rice did that too, but he did them in separate times in his career, whereas this kid did it all in one year. Stafford with the game-winning drive, he's had the most since he came in the league, his 45th, I believe. you know, it's just crazy. I mean, they him and Kupp have the second most postseason touchdowns behind Brady and Moss from 2009, I believe. I mean, they just went haywire. They just went crazy at the very end. It was a very competitive game, which you got to appreciate. And they really didn't light it up until they had to. So it was, you know, whether you had skin in the game or not, it was a great game to watch. I rooted for anybody that did anything great. And Stafford, like he's been doing it forever. He just said, all right, boys, like Montana, anybody else, we're going down the field, we're scoring. So I was just curious. He almost left too much time because that other kid's a magician, too.
So, my exact thought when that I was telling my family was we were watching the game. Uh-oh, they've left a lot of time on the clock. And it's funny. I have full disclosure, when the playoffs began, I didn't pick the Rams. I wasn't picking the Rams. Right. Don't get me wrong. I love them, and I was rooting for them. But I picked the Packers and the Chiefs. I thought we were finally going to get that long-awaited Rodgers-Mahomes matchup that we've been clamoring for, and it didn't happen. And, you know, when you think about it, Cooper, you mentioned Cooper Kupp. I mean, when you think about over the course of the season, in this day and age with hype and highlights and all the social media buzz, I mean, don't get me wrong, he had a phenomenal season and people knew who he was. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, I mean, he kind of had a quiet monster season, if you will. I mean,
almost 2,000 yards too.
I mean he kind of did it, but you weren't right. It's not like you were seeing him wall-to-wall Cooper Kupp coverage every single day throughout the season. I mean, he, you know, there was a lot of people getting a lot of love and attention aside from him, and so that stood out to me. But you summed it up perfectly. I mean, that was the game was on the line that final drive, and he and Stafford they took over. And props to them. I mean, props to Stafford with all the pressure. And literally, I mean, when that trade was made a year ago, it was Super Bowl or bust. And it's one thing to say that and, you know, believe in it and hope for it, but it's another thing to come through and deliver. And how many times do we see, I've coined the NFL the no favorites league, because you don't want to be a favorite. It's much better to be the underdog than a favorite in the NFL. And how many favorites do we see go down when they were expected to win? Right. They couldn't handle the pressure as being a favorite. So props to the Rams. It wasn't the blowout, or they didn't light it up, but they got it done when they had to. And boy, Aaron Donald, that fourth quarter was just, he's without a doubt my favorite Ram of all time.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up real quick before we want to open it up to everybody. You know, Beckham, the wide receiver, and Von Miller, the linebacker, they're both, to name just two, they're both free agents next year. And, you know, they gave up all their picks to get Stafford and these other guys. None of their picks coming up are supposedly top 100 in the draft. So, you know, they got their work cut out for them now at this point. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But they've done a pretty good job of being able to retool, and they still have, I think, a very good foundation, even if Von Miller doesn't, or even if, I mean, Odell Beckham, I don't know when he's going to be able to play again with the ACL. So we'll see. I mean, look, we see how difficult it is to repeat, but they should be okay. They should be able to be competitive. And then now more than ever with the extra game, it's literally just who can survive the regular season, who can get hot, and what'll happen in the playoffs. But I'm okay with it. Hey, you got the Super Bowl. I'm okay with that.
You know what? Let's open it up to the Fatal Four-Way. Jake, maybe you want to ask a question with him covering the Lakers and everything. Maybe he wants to ask a question that you had the Redskins and the Ravens for the Super Bowl. So, Jake, you got a question for Jeff, or Jeff, maybe you got a question for Jake?
I have one question, Jake. I loved what you shared, by the way. Great insight. I just wanted to clarify this, because I actually was kind of growing to – I like the football team name. Could they have kept that if they wanted to, or did they have to get rid of that?
I'm sure they could have kept it, but I feel like the prevailing logic would have been, we spent how much time on a rebrand and you just kept what you had. part of me feels like that's why they didn't stick with their classic uniforms, because I feel like they probably prepared for a certain segment of fans, probably the vocal minority, saying, you know, you were promoting this rebrand for the last 18 months and everything's the same except the helmet, really, which would not have been my prevailing. That was not my frame of mind. I would have been perfectly content with them keeping the original uniforms that they had, because like I said earlier, it's the heritage franchise with, right. You know, it should look like they have a classic look. It doesn't. And the look that they had, it wasn't outdated. It was just a simple look, and then the colors just stood out. I feel like they tried too hard in modernizing what they had.
Jake,
I feel like
absolutely
football, also in terms of speaking as, you know, speaking on behalf of the media, it's been annoying trying to reframe your brain calling them the football team. Like if someone writes something about them, it's tough, you know, having to cut it down to just three letters, WFT, which if you flip the last two around could be an issue for some people.
Right.
So, if you think of it in the frame of mind, Chase Young is a football team defensive end. No, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that's like calling me, I'm the Jake human being. So yeah, I know I'm a human being.
Right. Jake, I thought they could have got away with the Skins. What do you think about that? You know, just a hyphen and then Skins, because it almost keeps it. It gets rid of the racial overtone. You know, what do you think?
I feel the opposite, though. I feel like if you're going to move away from it, the whole reason was it's red skins. They were talking about skin color and color of a person. So I feel like if you're keeping the word Skins in there, that's kind of part of the point of why they got rid of it in the first place. So there's no way they could have kept that.
I was channeling my inner Daniel Snyder.
Yikes.
Well, I know early on in the process, the team president, Jason Wright, said that Warriors was a personal favorite of his. And I know that was a favorite amongst a lot of the fan base as well, in terms of immediately replacing Redskins with that name. But they, part of their process was speaking with Native American groups, and Native American groups said that it's too close to the previous rebranding. And so they decided altogether to go away from any connotation, Native American branding or connotation, anything that would hint at that, to, you know, avoid any future controversy. So that Warriors name was taken off the board pretty quickly, even though that would have been, I think, widely applauded by most of the fan base, even though they begrudgingly had to have let go of the previous name.
How did the Chiefs not fall into this dilemma? Because the thing with the Indians, I mean, they named they named their team the Indians after a former player, and they were honoring this guy. So it had nothing to do with anything. You know, there was no animosity. It was no, it was like a derogatory thing or anything. And they still.
Yeah, I remember. You know, I remember the. I think it was Clark Hunt, the owner of the Chiefs, saying that they had spoken to Native American groups from their area, in Missouri, as well, and they unilaterally decided it's not offensive to that group, and they decided to keep it, but they did ban face paint and headdresses.
Right.
But I did find it ironic and interesting that when the Chiefs were at FedEx Field this year, that the fans were doing the tomahawk chop and chant in the home stadium of a team that had to get rid of their Native American associations. I found that quite ironic, and
it's a mess.
I'm keeping an eye on, you know, what are the Chicago Blackhawks going to do, or the Florida State Seminoles to keep their name. I imagine they will, because from my understanding, there's money that goes to the Seminole tribe in order for them to use that branding.
They're in accord with it. The Seminoles are all for Florida State. They have no problem whatsoever. And because, like the Chiefs, it honors them. You know, it's not a negative thing, you know, at all.
Yeah. So I'm just, I am keeping an eye on that, though. Even that's kind of what the intention of, you know, the Redskin branding and the logo was to honor them. Yeah. I'm keeping an eye on, you know, what are these other teams going to do? I know so far they've been steadfast in saying, you know, we're going to keep our branding with how it is right now. And I can understand why, in terms of the fact that, you know, they've had these names for so long, and it's ingrained into the hearts and minds of those locales. So
that's all well and good, but they're going to cave. Just the way it is. PC's taking over.
Hey, real fast, we've got about 2 minutes left. I want to fire a question back over to Jeff Biggs. Biggsy, you were part of that Rome thing, man. I'll tell you, that clone, Jim Rome and the guys. I don't know how the Liberty Bell smack. Can we give these guys a run for their money? First thought on that. Second thought, give me a quick Kobe Bryant story, man, covering that team and everything. I was blessed enough to interview him a couple times, but man, traveling with those guys, man, that had to be something.
Yeah, Kobe, I mean, look, this show is awesome. I love it. So glad I was able to be a part of it. And Kobe was a loner. I mean, he spent a lot of time by himself, but then that was early in his career. And then he really grew, and his heart really grew. And you saw that love coming out from him as a teammate and a leader and a father and a husband. And I think about him all the time. I miss him. Still can't believe he's gone, but he was truly, truly one of a kind. To say the least.
I'm sitting about 8 minutes away from his high school down the street.
There you go.
Lower Merion.
There you go.
Yeah. The Aces. Yeah. The Aces.
Marianne, you got a question?
No, I'm just so excited that they're both here. And what's really crazy is it's the hour goes by so fast when you have good guests such as yourselves, and it's like already gone. So I have a question for Jake. If people wanted to listen to you or find you or even find your book, how do they do that?
Wow. On Twitter, I'm at underscore Jake Russell. I joined Twitter about 11 years ago, and I was late to the party, so I had to go in front of my name. on Instagram, it's Jake Russell 83. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/byjakerussell, BYJAKERUSSELL. And I would love every one of your listeners to go to jakerusselsports.com and click on the Nationals book tab and buy a million books. That would be fantastic. No pressure. Nice.
That sounds like a throwdown, a challenge, something.
Yes, wow. I tell you, in Philadelphia to buy a Nationals book. Don't be scared.
Hey, you know what? Just bring a bunch of them into the. You see the Flyers tonight. The Capitals are there. Just sell them in there. Those Philly guys will buy them.
Well, that would be a good thing. And Jeff, if people want to find you, because you're all over the place, how could they find you?
Thanks, you guys. Biggs underscore Jeff, BIGGS underscore Jeff on Twitter. And Facebook as well, Jeff Biggs. And again, Sports Map Radio, sportsmapradio.com on weekends, 1 to 4 Eastern with Howard Balzer.
See, he's got underscores too all over the place, Jake. You're not alone.
Sucks being at the party, doesn't it, Jeff?
Somebody stole my name.
Hey, Jake, when you republished your book, you added up until the championship year?
Well, I revised any reference to not having a title and all those. I made little minor changes to almost chapter sidebar, and then I added new chapters as well. And I bumped out a couple of the older chapters from the previous book that weren't necessarily as relevant to obviously winning a World Series in there, going from 19-31 to a World Series champion, and all these different storylines that happened in the 3 years since the first book came out.
Yeah, I'm thinking about republishing mine, stopping it at the 1999 year, so I don't have to keep adding every year, you know.
Well, that would be a very, very good idea. And Jake and Jeff, when we leave the show, we like to do a Liberty Bell Smack chant. Can you guys hang around just for a minute and do that with us?
Uh-oh.
Absolutely.
And if you guys were just listening to wonderful guests Jake Russell and Jeff Biggs right here on Liberty Bell Smack, it was that lip smacking, trash talking good Philadelphia style every Thursday night from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Primetime Drive Time. And next week, we have two ladies coming to Liberty Bell Smack. Watch out, Mark and Sal.
Yep.
We are going to have the author of Cassie's Miracle, Yvette Blake. And we're also going to have the realtor, a sports manager, life coach, business developer, brand marketing specialist, Missy Echeveta. I hope I said that right.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a dynamite show. I just don't know how you guys are going to hold up, you know, with three ladies.
I'll be on my best behavior.
Missy's another Annie Hoffman that came through here, and I'll tell you, we're just so blessed. Each and every week we get great guests, and with Jake and Jeff sticking around right after this, we can get some promos done, get some more publicity in Philadelphia.
Yeah, then we owe them a cheesesteak.
Yeah.
That's Sal,
you gotta start bringing these things when you start showing up in the studio, man.
Well, I would eat in front of you then. How can you guys have any?
He said, I'm going to confess right here. He said that you weren't stuck in traffic. You were busy buying a cheesecake.
Cheesecake?
That's what I said. And he ran out of the car and he was selling his book.
Yeah.
hey, the trunk.
When you're at the
hey,
Liberty,
how do you get the trunk?
When you're being driven by someone nice enough to do that for you, you don't complain. So if we get stuck or we had a flat, hey, what are you going to do?
Well, between that and not knowing Valentine's Day.
Oh,
I don't know.
Well, I'm only half to blame. We were both at fault. We didn't even realize. And I was actually the first one to say Happy Valentine's after I realized at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hey, Marianne, at least he stopped in Philly. He would have kept going to Rahway, New Jersey.
Yeah, I know. And then he would have had to deal with me. And chocolate. I love chocolate.
Me
just
too. Just not just eat it. I want to roll around in it.
Oh, I hear you. And now that we've confessed all of that live on the air, you can find us next Thursday night right here on WWDB Talk AM 860, right here for another glorious hour of Liberty Bell Smack. And we thank all of our fans out there for listening each and every week, whether it be out on the radio, whether it be on the apps, and even in Facebook Live and participating that way for our guests and for all of us. And I am Marianne Costello, along with my hosts, Mark Mancini and Sal Tartaglia, and our special guests, Jeff and Jake. Are you guys ready to close the show with us with our Liberty Bell Smack chant?
We are ready.
So the way it works is we start at 5, we count down to 1, and we all say Liberty Bell Smack together. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
It's really easy. Here we go. 5.
5.
4.
4.
3.
3.
2,
1, Liberty Bell Smack!